Well, you know I have a love, a love for everyone I know. And you know I have a drive to live, I won't let go. That I see a darkness, and that I see a darkness, and that I see a darkness, and that I see a darkness. Did you know how much I love you? Is a hope that somehow you can save me from this darkness.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy. And for the listeners, the song they just listened to was a choice by Nick. Which, Nick, do you want to explain how...
Well, I have to admit, I listened to the official podcast on Tuesday, as I normally do, and I did think, that was amateur hour for depressing music. I know far more depressing music than that. I've been a Richmond supporter for 30 years.
Yeah, and well done. It was a very depressing choice. But, you know, actually, I must say, while we're on the topic, that was an excellent podcast by the official podcast. It's one of the best I've had.
Hmm.
How are you feeling?
After the game on Sunday, I went and lay down in a darkened room for 3 hours until my wife got worried that I needed to eat something because I'd been too nervous to eat anything since breakfast. Like, Sunday wasn't easy.
It wasn't easy. On Monday, I happened to have a meeting with the AFL, not people who are involved with the on-field product, but some of their development people for a work-related matter. And I must admit, when it took all my professional pride not to just cancel the meeting, and I just did feel like... Like in the couple of minutes before they came out to meet me when I was in the foyer, I just did feel like laying in the foyer of the AFL and weeping, you know, being surrounded by that AFL, all the AFL memorabilia and the countdown to the AFL. And then I met them at, they were lovely, professional guys, wonderful guys. And at the end of the meeting, as we were walking out, we were talking about what we were doing next, and it came up I'd be overseas for the grand final. And they said, oh, what a shame you're going to miss the grand final. And I had to bite my tongue because every part of me wanted to say, there's absolutely no way I'm watching any more AFL for the rest of the year. My heart is broken. I don't want anything to do with the AFL ever again. Anyway, I'm over it now, but it wasn't easy.
No, look, I reckon I'm going to give this weekend a pass. I might engage back with the finals next week, but I'm just feeling a bit emotionally bruised to watch any football this weekend.
No, I'm done till next year's preseason. But anyway, Nick, let's talk about the day and the game.
I know. Well, as always, it's a lesson that punditry is a mug's game, because we talked on the show last week about the importance of efficiency going forward and how that had been one of the key factors, both in Richmond North games in recent years, but more generally in North season. And it didn't turn out that way at all. We were, aside from a few misses from Griff in the first quarter, I mean, generally we kicked really well. We took our opportunities.
And Ty's famous miss in the last.
Oh, and Ty's famous miss. Yeah, I was repressing that one. But
no, but you're right. We I was actually, after the game, I was shocked by not so much the outcome, because as a Richmond supporter, you always emotionally prepare for the worst. And I was very optimistic before the game, but I was not at all prepared for the way we lost. As you like, to just, you know, be minus 33 in contested possessions, to be absolutely done on, like, to be so efficient in front of goals and to still lose. Like, I was not at all prepared to lose general play, which we did. And you know,
no, it, it wasn't as bad as the Adelaide game for the sense in which our midfield got overwhelmed, but it was a bit
That's exactly what I was thinking. And we haven't talked about this beforehand, but yes, that it was sort of Adelaide game light. And actually watching the highlights was painful again while watching the replay, because you realise that how close we came to stealing that game. But, you know, it would have been an injustice.
It would have been theft. And look, and you know, part of that was the individual skill of guys like Jack, who really stood up and took their chances. But it was a tough game.
It was. I do want to talk about the day a bit. I was lucky enough, aside from the horrific trolling by the Sun, the Herald Sun, on their Sunday back paper. And, you know, there's been some excellent articles written by people from both papers, but if you don't have the guts, as a general rule, if you don't have your guts to put your name to the byline, it's a crap article. That it was both unfunny, unoriginal, and shameless trolling that a 14-year-old on Bigfooty can do better than. So I'm embarrassed for all the good writers at the Herald Sun whose name were by association brought down by that horrific back page cover, because it's Richmond supporters that and other of the big Melbourne clubs that keep the Herald Sun afloat. It's certainly not for the quality of their intellectual analysis in the front bit of the paper. It's the AFL that keeps the Herald Sun afloat. And for them to blatantly troll a supporter base of the backbone of the AFL, just, as you can tell, irritates me no end. And having said that, you know, I've got great respect for many writers of the Herald Sun, but I was just so disappointed in that back page. Anyway, moving on. I walked down...
Look, we know that trolling Richmond supporters has been a sort of fallback for the Hun in, for years, frankly. And look, some of it's come out in their analysis since. Like, yeah.
Some of it's good though.
Didn't add anything.
I didn't want to. I don't want to tire everyone with the same brush. I just think it's particularly dysfunctional amongst some people there. So I walked down. I was lucky enough, between meeting two groups of friends, I actually spent a bit of time with a few North supporters who happened to own a bar at a midday, so obviously I had to leave them when game time came close, and I was walking from South Yarra to where I was. I walked up Church Street. I was lucky enough to walk up Church Street at about 2 p.m., and I must admit, I was lucky wearing sunnies because I found the experience so moving. I was literally brought to tears because everywhere you went, you know, it didn't matter whether you're fat and old and couldn't pull it off or whether you're young and fit. Everyone was wearing Richmond jerseys. There were Tiger jumpers everywhere. And the North supporters, I joked about this on Twitter. I did see a couple. It might just be coincidence. But, you know, saw a couple of boat shoes looking like they were going to the now non-fictional Catalina wine mixer. But, like, the Richmond supporters, like, all of them were all decked out in all their colours and the passion and the excitement. It was actually brilliant. Like, it was quite moving, that sort of that tide of Richmond humanity. It was special to be part of. And I felt sorry for people who have to get to the ground early to just not feel like, you know, Richmond before a big game. Is just something wonderful to behold.
I know, and that's actually been, once the pain of Sunday started to numb slightly and I transitioned through the stages of grief, it was of some consolation that, you know, the experience of making finals up until we actually played the game, it's been fantastic for 3 years in a row, and it, you know, every time I'm proud to be a Richmond supporter. Yeah, if we can just do something about the outcome of these games. And, oh my God, what is it going to be like when we make a grand final one day?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of, like, I've been hurt so many times now. I can't get that excited about the first round of the finals again. Like, I'll turn up next time, but I just, it's got to be, they've got to win a couple again to win me back, because that was so traumatic. It was funny. I wanted to put this on Twitter, but sometimes irony doesn't go down well on Twitter. I joked to a few sort of rusted on Tigers supporters, that, you know, if this doesn't work out this weekend, talking about the final, let's all 70,000 of us just shake hands, agree this isn't working for any of us, and find other hobbies. And I was joking with a few people about the other hobbies. Best answer I had was netball. You know, quite a good professional league, needs some good support. But yeah,
I did like Titus O'Reilly on Twitter saying, you know, Richmond supporter gives up the game on Monday, renews his membership on Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't quit you.
Yeah, I think it's I wish I knew how to quit you, but yeah, point taken. Yeah, so it was, So I'm going to, like, emotionally, I just can't go back there again on the first week of the finals, but it was a brilliant experience. And actually, my favourite moment of the whole day was I was, you know, sitting next to two hardcore Richmond supporters, and one of them's a bit is a friend and listens to the show, and knows my views on the playing of Chris Newman. And just to clarify that, I've always, like long term, I know what Chris Newman's done for the club behind the scenes, and if anything, the club's tribute video underdid his contribution behind the scenes to Richmond, because he did a lot to keep us up in the dad times. My criticism of Newey has always been picking a 33-year-old to play a marginal flank role. It's not Newman, it's the choice to play Newman. But when he kicked that second goal of the game, and you know, had, you know, was clearly having his best game of the year, sort of a friend next to me was paying me out because Newman was playing so well, and I was laughing so hard, and I hugged him after Newman kicked that goal, because it was such a great moment, and the crowd was up. And I mean, you know, there's a difference between criticizing someone's selection and not wanting in the deep down, just wanting in the heart of hearts to watch Newey walk off the field being a champion and having played a good game. I wanted that so badly. And that was when he kicked that goal in the second quarter, the long, his second one, and there was nothing to kick to. North had an extra man in the defence, and he created a goal out of nothing. Best goal he's kicked of the year, if not of his career. It was just a magic moment, but unfortunately it wasn't to be.
I know. Look, on a day of sort of profoundly disappointing moments, the shot of Newey walking off the ground for the last time, that really pulled at the heartstrings. That was a genuinely difficult moment.
It was really impressive how many Richmond supporters stayed at the end of the game to farewell him. Mm. That was quite moving. I did enjoy that. And he underplayed it. Like, he just tapped his jersey. He could have done the full jumper tug, because would have made 40,000, or 20,000, whoever was left, all cry if he did that. But he didn't do it. But yeah, it was a moving moment.
It was completely in character with his career and thought. And just the, you know, the end of footy careers is always hard. Like, you know, that walking off the ground for the last time. I thought Jack's comment on the official podcast about, you know, just what it's like knowing you're never gonna walk off the ground again. You know, it's not easy. And you know, just knowing that he's never gonna play in a winning final team, that was a real kick in the guts.
Yeah, I once heard Russell Green, who was a 300-game player, won premierships for Hawthorn. He said once he'd give it all back, all the awards, all the things he won, just to be able to run onto the field one more time with the guys. And it's pretty powerful. And, you know, it's the experience of that final. Okay, we lost, but, like, the experience of so much being on the line, and, you know, the excitement of having 90,000 people hang on every moment. And, you know, you don't get that in other parts of life. Like, you can see it's an emotional moment. Anyway, Nick, I want to transition, and we don't want to analyse the game too much. We sort of covered the big thing, as we were flogged in general play. We were surprisingly close. It was both a game that was not close and both close at the same time. Like, in hindsight, yeah, the scoreboard was actually, we could have stolen it, but it would have been a travesty, as we said. But I just wanted to very briefly, Nick, talk about sort of, we now have three games as final samples, and, you know, I do feel...
We're going to point fingers?
A little bit. Don't want to overdo it, but just short.
All right. Well, but before we start, I had a slightly different approach when thinking about this game, but I mentioned, I think it was about a month ago, we had a game where we had five guys all have their season highs for disposals, you know, 4 months into the season, which is pretty impressive. Equally, the other way, if you're playing a final and you have four guys have their season lows, and in some cases by a considerable margin, yeah, maybe you're not going to win.
Yep. Do you want to name those people?
Well, the big one in sheer numerical terms is that Brandon Ellis has had exactly two games all season where he's had fewer than 22 disposals. Like, he's been a relentlessly consistent ball winner. And, yep, we both love him as a footballer, but Saturday was a million miles from his best game. Chappie had his season low. Chimp, you know, as has been discussed, tough game. And yeah, as much as it breaks my heart, because we are big fans, but Shane Edwards, unfortunately, was among the missing, and not for the first time.
Yeah.
In a final.
So just going through that list of people, Edwards has three finals appearances. His position code count is 8-11-11. So he's averaging 10 touches a final versus 19 this year. Ellis, now admittedly his first final, he was young, but he's averaging 14 in his three finals appearances and versus 26 this year. Cochin, so it's probably been pretty well documented that he had a bad final last year. In fairness, like, you got to take the three games as a whole. He had 26 in the Carlton final. You might remember he was very quiet in the last quarter, though. Mm. But he's been averaging 17 possessions for the three finals versus 25 overall. Chappie's quite noticeable. He's averaging 9 possessions a final versus 15 overall. Like, possessions aren't everything, but we all know Chappie's game was worse than his possession count. Him getting tackled by Nahas. And if you want an idle moment, sit down and compare Nahas' statistical output to some of the small forwards we've been playing. I'm not going to overplay that. Look at it, compare it, make up your own mind. And Lids actually has been singled out, but he actually wasn't too bad. Statistically, he had 17, but he had 29 in the previous final, so he actually hasn't been the problem. Flossie's been...
No, he's had his share of big moments in... In finals.
Flossie's, but...
Look, Jake Batchelor, for me, is one who, particularly the last 2 years, has... Well, he was almost embarrassed against Port Adelaide. Well, and frankly, he was beaten pretty badly.
And was embarrassed against North.
Well, look, part of it... Look, Jared Waite is a really talented guy, and unfortunately we got one of his three really good games a year, so I thought part of it was bad luck as well as bad management. But yeah, I'll let. Was there anyone else you had on your list?
Well, we've averaged minus 16 in the headouts in all our finals. I'll leave that there, and it has been an issue. The quality clearances in most of our finals have gone to our opposition.
Yeah. So what do we take away?
I think we've got to take away that. Okay, so this is just before we went on, you said to me, "It's Thursday. We need to move on in the grieving process." So I am. I think I'm past the angry part, but I have been in the angry part for a bit this week. I think we
Well, the of the two selection decisions, I thought the... I understood the reasoning behind playing Griffiths, partly because I thought North Melbourne did a pretty good job against Lennon last week, but it really didn't work.
No, it didn't. I'm glad you brought it up. Like, it was me. I'm usually the one who's more prone to criticise selection process, and it was me who wrote the tweet saying you could understand it from the perspective of managing Goldstein, but from the other perspective, but beforehand, so it's good to have that balance. But no, it didn't work, and arguably you should have known it wouldn't have worked if you'd seen Griffiths in training for the last few weeks and could have judged his level of performance. The Conker one as a sub, meh, he was okay. He kicked that nice goal. The turnover, I was sort of sitting an angle. It was pretty bad on the TV. I was seeing an angle of the Great Southern Stand behind the goals. It looked even worse. And it was everything that was bad about Conker, that he was falling. He was doing a wanky chip kick and falling. His weight wasn't behind the kick. But that wasn't because he was unfit. It's because Rhys Conker does that all the time. So I don't know. Like, I don't want it. The Conker selection, meh.
It didn't bother me.
The Griffiths one, no, it didn't work.
No, that was a mistake. Didn't work. But
yeah. So I think, like, big picture, what do you take from it? I think personally, what I take from it is we're not close. Like, we're not
close to a premiership.
No, and
we are.
We're okay. We're a decent team.
We won 15 games and we deserve to win 15 games, so there's something to build on. But there's not... that you can't be satisfied with what we are, but it's not a tear-it-down territory. But there has to be a convincing narrative on how next year will be better than this year.
No, I agree with that, but I also think if anyone says natural progression will get us there, they should be sacked. They have no business being in football, because you can say that to the fans, and we all want to believe that Nick Foster next year will turn into Luke Hodge and get 29 possessions a game. But the reality is that may happen, but on the statistical probability, he's probably going to be a very good, solid player for his career and not be Luke Hodge. Mm.
Well, I do want to return to this in a future show, where we talk about, you know, how we get better next year. And thankfully, the cupboard's not bare. There is some help coming from the young players on the list.
There is. I think this is a longer conversation, but yeah. I'll just make the point about the team on the weekend. If you take a hard, honest look about who was in the 22 and who has significant upside, who can play significantly better on the ball? Well, aside from the people who played terribly but normally play better, like, who's got significant upside from their season output? Well, it's probably Conker because of injury, which is, you know, is always an iffy thing because he's been injured a lot. It's probably Camden McIntosh. Like, the team is not packed full of you know, young rising prospects. It's got a lot of guys who are in their mid-20s who aren't going to get worse. So there's not a massive downside for this team. I mean, North Melbourne had a massive downside. They have a lot of older guys. So there's not a massive downside.
They were positively ancient.
They were, but there was also not a big upside. And to go the next step...
No, I agree with the point that 22 doesn't have an enormous scope for improvement. There has to be, like, how we became a better team... this year versus last year was, you know, principally Lambert, McIntosh, Lennon coming into the team and Hunt and playing some pretty good football. So that's, you know, that's what has to happen again next year, is 3 to 4 guys coming into the team and lifting that standard.
Yep, I think, but this year basically we upgraded some of the bottom end. I think genuinely we have to be going up. And this is a broader conversation. I don't want to get off. I want to talk about Dimmer's press conference and the tick. We need to get someone who's going to potentially be, you know, top 5 players in the club. It's not good enough to just keep doing people who are going to be a slight upgrade on your bottom players, because frankly, our top five, if that's the our if the top five players we came in into the game in this game are our top five players in the next final, well, the record is there. It's not looking great. We need another. We need a few more top miners. But let's. Is there anything you want to add to that before I talked about the press conference?
Well, let's return to this point, and I think we will repeatedly. But what did you want to say about the press conference?
It was funny. Dimmer was, you know, Dimmer's always good in this, and we praised him before about the how he can be quite dignified in defeat, and he was again. But you could see the cracks when the it was apparently he's an AFL media manager, and his phone went off, and Dimmer said, "Effing moron," under his breath as the phone went off, and I thought, interesting. And he also criticised the umpires openly, which, you know, was obviously never a good idea because you get fined for it. Other than that, I thought he was good.
And it is quite out of character for
him. Yeah, it was. But, you know, actually, it was out of character. And, yeah, it was what it was, but you could see the cracks showing a bit. But, you know, he was persuasive overall. And I must say the club this week has been relatively persuasive in the media. Like, from a gut reaction, Tyrone Vickery saying all we need to do is execute the game plan better, I think is complete. From an analytical perspective internally, I think that's completely untrue, but it's not a bad message to say externally.
No, look, I'm not fazed by that at all to hear that from a player. I would be really worried to hear that from an official. You know, players have to go out there thinking that if they play well and they execute their game plan, they can beat anybody. That has to be the mindset they have. So, you know, it's the people making hard decisions on the list that have to be in the Hall of Mirrors and asking the tough questions.
Yeah. And, you know, frankly, on the coaching staff, because, you know, there is this is both to win the premiership, as Dimmer himself has said, you know, there are 17 clubs that fail, one club that succeeds. 6 out of 10 doesn't get you, it is not good enough in sport. 6 out of 10 gets you sacked. 6 out of 10 in most professions in life. 7 out of 10 in most professions in life gets you a long and successful career. 7 out of 10 in coaching, in football management, will get you sacked eventually. So you have to always be pushing towards the 10 out of 10. Anyway, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about the game?
Well, actually, I just wanted to talk briefly about the decision to can the Mad Monday celebrations.
Oh, yes.
Well, I thought this was a good decision, you know, partly because I was still in the dark chamber of despair, but also I think I've been very influenced by, firstly, my brother-in-law having his collarbone broken by a Carlton player on Mad Monday celebrations, you know, which, if I needed any more excuses for disliking Carlton.
A fairly famous Carlton player, we should add.
A fairly famous Carlton player, yes. But also the a good article by Tim Boyle in The Age a few years ago, who talked about one of the problems with Mad Monday was, you know, you go super hard and then suddenly it's 3 p.m. on a Monday afternoon and you're full of drink and you've got nowhere to go. I can understand why the guys maybe went for lunch. Yeah, if they wanted to blow off some steam, better to do it in a far less high-profile way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And they probably are getting disgustingly something or other at some stage, but maybe just, as you say, doing a less high-profile way. I do think, because the modern AFL football, unlike us when we went on our end-of season blow-offs, they're probably not as piss-fit as, you know, your average amateur footballer.
It's probably lesser an integral part of... They probably didn't wait to hear if and where they were selected on Thursday night over a few beers.
Yeah, so, yeah, you do wonder about their safety. But, and, you know, I mean, frankly, who would you actually, like, you know, do you think when people are having beers at the pub, they really fight to sit next to Trent Cotchin? You know, it's all, you know, just, it's a different personality. It's not the, it's, you know.
I don't know. He's mates with Dusty. There might be a quiet side to him that's a bit more fun.
Stillwater's run great.
Who, if you had to pick anyone out of the Richmond playing group to have half a dozen beers with, who would you pick?
Well, that's a tough one because, you know,
really?
Being...
Oh, I had an answer straight away.
Well, being in the late 30s, it's sort of, I'm not particularly... Well, I don't particularly like drinking with people who are more than a decade younger than me in most cases. Well, maybe Jack.
How was it not Ivy?
Ivy's kind of a bit serious. I think he'd freak me out.
He's pretty funny, though.
He is. Ty's quite smart, so I think you can actually have a good conversation with him.
He might be good. Jack's right into the NFL, so that might be fun.
Yeah, actually, I was impressed Richo's into the NFL. And, you know, you can have a conversation with... I've always thought Sean Greek seems like a nice guy. I know that seems weird.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it's a good question. I did like Titus O'Reilly's line about Richmond supporters were mesmerised by Alex Rance's jawline. He is ridiculously handsome, so that would just be distracting to talk to him. Yeah. Many options. I would love to have a beer with Shane Tuck. Not least because I can remember about 10, 15 incredible moments that he did incredibly brave things, which he probably can't. I could tell him about so many awesome things he did in his career.
Well, it remains one of the highlights of this podcast when we did have beers with Ray Hall.
Yeah, I was thinking about that in the game, and I was wondering how loud the crowd was, because you can't tell when you're in the crowd. And actually, there was a moment when Ty kicked his the goal just before three-quarter time and kept us in the game. I got so excited, I screamed so loud that I passed out, just for half a second, started to topple forward. I just had to steady myself on the people in front, and I know they must have thought that I'd had too much to drink, but I actually hadn't. I was drinking light beer during the game because I thought we were going to win, and I want to remember the beautiful moment. But yeah, it was very, very emotional. I presume the crowd was loud, because I certainly was loud.
I couldn't go, but it didn't quite seem as fanatically loud as the Carlton game, but it was loud.
It was loud for the people who had to sit next to me, and I apologise for those people who did. rumours, Nick. We should talk about trade rumours.
Do you want to get into some of the off-season news?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it comes pretty quickly. You're barely dusting yourself off, but... From the game, but the club had announced Matty Madonna and Matt Armour moving on, which along with, you know, Ricky Paddard, Chris Knight, Nathan Foley, Chris Newman moving on, that's six guys already gone from the list.
Yeah. Matty Armour, I wasn't a huge... Yeah, so... Mariana, good luck to him. Hopefully he'll get a spot on the AFL list. Matt Madonna, as I've implied many times, I think he didn't get a fair run at the club. I'll be interested if he doesn't get another place on the AFL list. I think the coaching staff will be vindicated. If he does get another place on the AFL list, does start to play some decent footy at small forward for someone else. That combined with the fact that the team we just lost to on the weekend had a small forward who's okay-ish. Better than anyone statistically than we have on our list. Some hard questions we asked, but we'll wait and see.
I do think he could seriously win a McGarry medal if he went back to South Australia. Like he's been a good performer in the VFL.
We'll see. We'll see.
I think if getting back into the prediction business, so we've delisted five guys from our senior list, one from our rookie list. My prediction is we'll have at least another two guys delisted, or delisted or yeah, in the case of Matt D, possibly traded for a very late pick. But, yeah, I think two more changes, which would be 8. And right now, you know, before any of the trade business has started, if I had to guess, I'd say we delist 7 guys from our senior list. We promote Jason Castagna and Kane Lambert. So we recruit an extra 5 guys, 3 18-year-olds, a couple of mature-age guys, and, you know, fill out another 3 guys for the rookie list and, you know, maybe another sort of older VFL guy as well. So, yeah, that's my prediction for the off-season.
Mm. So let's talk about a few of the players that are potentially coming in.
Well, actually, before we do, we should just cover off Dylan Grimes' 3-year extension.
Yeah, it was nice. Good moment when he smacked into Higgins in the final.
Certainly enjoyed that.
We're fans of him.
Definitely enjoyed his season.
It's got a 3-year extension. I'd say, yeah, okay, it's great he's got a 3-year extension. His health was good this year, which is good because, you know, he's had a problem with that in the past. Mm.
Well, he's had 2 good years, which I'm very encouraged by.
Goodish. He's always missed games, but yeah. Goodish. But yeah,
he's 37 games in 2 years, and particularly his football's got better over that time. Like, I've really enjoyed his work this year.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like, there was no... I'm happy with it.
Hmm. Okay, so, you know, it is trade rumour time. Before we get into specifics, I'd like to... We've talked about the how seriously to take different rumours before, but, you know, again, if you hear a rumour and it seems ludicrous, it probably is. Like, the best way to evaluate whether or not a trade is realistic is whether or not, sort of when you hear it, you sort of have a little wince and say, oh, there's some pain there, but I can see why they'd want to do it. If it's ludicrously one-sided either way, so, you know, the worst one I've seen is Port Adelaide wanting to trade Aaron Young in a deal, include him in a deal for Charlie Dixon, according to the AFL Trades Twitter account. Well, Aaron Young has the same trade value as Tyler Hunt. Taylor Hunt did last year when he signed with another club for nothing. So, you know, pay no attention. You know, on the other hand, 2 first-round draft picks for Adam Traore. Sounds pretty reasonable.
It is. It was funny. We're obviously upset by the fact that, from what I hear, you know, he's going to Collingwood. But if you both listen to Benny and you also sort of listen to a few people behind the scenes, we're a bit shocked and disappointed he didn't choose us.
Well, and that Benny went to their CEO to sort of raise some eyebrows that their ex-Collingwood football operations manager was apparently happy to take a worse deal from Collingwood. You know, there was a smell of old fish around the whole thing, frankly.
Yeah, so we'll see how it plays out. I mean, sadly, he's the A-grade talent that we needed who looks like we're not going to get. Rumours we're not interested in Stevie J, which is interesting to me. I mean, I could sort of see that, but it doesn't quite make sense. Well, I mean, like, what was our plan for next year with small forwards?
I wouldn't rule any. I wouldn't make definitive judgments in the middle of September. But yeah, we said on a previous show, Stevie J's reputation has been ahead of his production the last couple of years, but he's still a very decent player. But
his production is probably ahead of what we're going to get next year, and it's not like we spent this year blooding the new talent that's going to slide in seamlessly to our half forward flank. So,
well, other than Ben Lennon,
well, Let's hope Ben Lennon's on the list next year.
No, well, yes, that is definitely a concern. But Ben Lennon's sort of last 6 weeks wasn't that far worse than Steve Johnson's form for much of the year. Look, there's any number of names being floated around. Just two I wanted to cover off really quickly. Sort of the most obtuse rumour I've heard was on Sen. They raised that we're interested in Jeb Lamb, which I have heard before, actually. But so he's a 23-year-old half-forward. He was a reasonably high draft pick back in 2010. And, you know, he signed a 3-year deal with the GWS, and he's played 2 senior games all year while being healthy almost all year. So, frankly, that would be dumping the last year of his contract effectively. So, you know, it would be a last man on the list type deal. So, you know, frankly, I don't really care either way if it happens.
Yeah, I mean, we've had, this is a superficial comparison, but just on the weekend, Miles was the best contested possession winner on the ground. Mm. The next 7 best contested possession winners were North Melbourne players. So you think how lucky we were to pick up Miles, who was only an afterthought in the rookie draft. Many other people could have taken him in front of us. I don't know. I'm always interested in those bottom of the list GWS guys because there are clearly some gems there.
And look, I know what you mean. Look, the big question mark, and it is all over the media, is Bunnell from Gold Coast. And look, I can see why. Like his best is extremely good. Like his best is as a dynamic, explosive. Yep. Forward who can win games for you, and we don't have a lot of those guys.
No,
there's also some red flags.
Before we get on the red flags, positive case, in his third year of his career, he averaged 23 disposals and 1.3 goals a year. He has, and if you watch him on in any game he plays where he's remotely interested in the football, he's extraordinary. He does, and I hate comparing Indigenous players to other Indigenous players because it's so lazy, but he has... Although he's a very different player, he has the Ciro Rioli capacity of looking like he's twice as fast as everyone else on the ground. There's just something about him. He has, you know, he can get a lot of the ball, he can kick goals, and he has that touch of magic that makes everyone else around him slow down. Both statistically and by the eye test, he stands out as a brilliant footballer. But
there are, even on field, there are questions that his most productive season was as a 20-year-old, and he's now had 3 years in a row that have just slightly been worse than the season before, which is a worry. It's normally an age where guys, you know, steadily improve, and the off field stuff is a concern, you know.
It's a massive concern. Like that's what clubs are ruling themselves out for a reason. Like, you know, there's...
Oh, yeah. And it's more than a few clubs have ruled them out. You know, Matthew Lloyd told the story of having to send him home from a junior tour because he was partying too much. And, yeah, and, you know, you'd expect a lot of clubs, not just Richmond, are doing some pretty serious due diligence right now.
Yeah, I think we're going harder, and because if we don't get Treloar, he's the only genuine A-grade talent left in the pool. It was funny, Benny was interviewed in SEN this week, and he was asked about Bunnell, and he took a massive intake and breath before he answered the question. He was choosing his words very carefully. Like, you could see it's a really tough decision.
So, look, there's going to be a lot of time to... analyze the off season, and there'll be any number of rumours and dramatic proclamations, and you know we're still 3 weeks away from the trade period even beginning. So you know. Well, this is a topic I think we'll return to repeatedly, because, you know, as I said, I've been proud of particularly Richmond fans over the last week, and, you know, it's just the question we all have is, you know, is this it? Is a 3-year period of being in the bottom half of the eight all we can aspire to, or, you know, can we lift our eyes a bit more? I think that's going to be the recurring theme for the off season.
It is, and this is very self-serving, but it does feel like Richmond supporters are the sort of Richmond supporters themselves are top four supporter base.
Top four,
arguably best. Yes. I don't want to be too self-serving, and yes, I think sometimes we have an inferiority complex because of our years of losing. But yeah, I don't think it's unreasonable to demand more, while also.
I wonder if we have PSD from all the years of losing, but you know, the persistence, the pride, you know. That gets me through.
It does, and fellow Richmond supporters, I just the one thing that gets me through on this is you're not alone, and there's some very good, smart, and passionate people who back for Richmond, and that keeps me going. Nick, just before we go, I just mentioned if people always appreciate iTunes reviews. You can email us on Richmond Tiger Talks. We've got some great emails this week. Some actually I want to come back to. It was a very passionate email we got, which I loved because it put a passionate defense of why we should have played Stevie Morris on the weekend. Another person I spoke to, like I've heard lots awesome. Of theories, but that we'll come back to some of those emails. And we always welcome them and we always think about them. Before we do the show, they always influence my thinking.
Well, yeah, and look, we're going to let the dust settle for a couple of weeks, and then we'll start with our usual end of season review. You know, talk about the trade period, delistings, if there's any coaching changes.
We will be back. We'll be back. I need to take some time out because if I start talking about Richmond too much, I start to rant right now. But we'll be back, as always. And, you know, we do it because we love it.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
See you next time.